And I will now pass it over to Dave Cernak and Angela Kretzinger, who will open today's call.
Thank you so much, Matt. And thank you all for joining us today. We have Dave Cernak, the Acting Regional Supervisor on the line, and I am Angela Kretzinger, Acting Regional Supervisor on the line. And before we hand it over to our first presenter, I would like to provide a brief overview on what we will cover today. Next slide, please. On our agenda, first, we will begin by providing a few updates relating to Asper's healthcare readiness programs. Next, Bob Bastani, the Senior Cybersecurity Advisor to the Office of Critical Infrastructure Protection, will provide an overview of HHS Sector Risk Management Agencies, or CERMA, S-R-M-A, strategic objectives. Next, after that, Rachel Lehman, the Acting Director of Asper Tracy, will provide an overview of Asper Tracy's cybersecurity tools and resources. Finally, we will leave some time at the end for questions from the audience. Next slide, please. And I'll turn it over to Dave.
Well, thank you, Angela, and good morning, good afternoon to everyone on the line today. We'd like to begin today's webinar with just a couple of administrative updates. So next slide, please. All right, starting off with the MRSE, or the Medical Response and Surge Exercise update. The MRSE design team has made a number of updates to the MRSE this year and is supporting tools and its supporting tools for BP5. The updates for this coming budget period include a layout of the exercise planning and evaluation tool, a streamlined version of the surge estimator tool, which will be incorporated into the MRSE, a simplified required patient tracking data input chart, qualitative questions on health equity considerations, a qualitative question to document the roles and activities of important MRSE participants, and optional guidance to support healthcare coalitions in more fully, including additional non-core HCC core members within the exercise. The updated MRSE exercise planning and evaluation tool, situation manual, and evaluation plan will be rolled out in early of July 2023 as part of a national webinar. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, the National Healthcare Preparedness Response Capabilities pre-decisional draft review has been extended. So as many of you know, ASPR is currently updating the healthcare preparedness response and capabilities to reflect insights learned from the recent disasters. And now we are at the point where we are soliciting your feedback and input as part of our pre-decisional review. We know many of you participated in the discussions leading up to the development of the pre-decisional draft, and now we welcome your review and feedback. We have extended the deadline for comments until this Friday, June 16th. You can view the pre-decisional review draft and access the online comment matrix to submit your comments using the links we'll share in the chat. Thank you so much, Matt. And next slide, please. All right, the updated ASPR organizational structure. So as you might remember, last time we met, we discussed ASPR's updated organizational structure, and we want to quickly revisit some of these updates. Under the updated organizational structure, the National Healthcare Preparedness Programs was elevated from a branch to an office and renamed the Office of Healthcare Readiness. This is an exciting elevation within ASPR's organizational structure and is a result of the growing emphasis on the importance of healthcare readiness. We've heard concerns that HPP or other programs may be going away with this new organizational structure, but this is not the case. In fact, our name change and elevation to an office results in more attention and focus on our programs, which is a good thing. On the screen, you can see ASPR's new org chart to the left, and on the right, you can see the Office of Healthcare Readiness in a little bit more detail. We've broken down our major capabilities as well as our programs and activities. As you can see, there have been no major changes to those programs or activities. So rest assured, our partners will continue to be our priority, and we look forward to growing our partnerships with each of you. We will now pass it over to Bob Bastani, to discuss an overview of the HHS Sector Risk Management Agency's strategic objectives. So next slide, please.
And Bob, before you start, there's a question in the chat. If the office is within an office, the Office of Healthcare Readiness is in the Office of Preparedness.
That is correct. So the Office of Preparedness is an executive office within ASPR, which is led by a Deputy Assistant Secretary, Deborah Kramer. And the Office of Healthcare Readiness is an office within that office. I hope that makes sense. All right. If there's no other questions, we'll turn it over to you, Bob.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Bob Bastani. I am a senior cybersecurity advisor in the Office of Critical Infrastructure Protection in ASPR. Next slide, please. Real quick, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the critical infrastructure concept and the concept of sector risk management agencies. I know some of you might be familiar with it, but some of you might not be, so we will cover that a little bit. And then we'll talk about the cybersecurity challenges and threats in healthcare and public health. We'll spend a little time introducing you to how ASPR is structured to do its duty as this SRMA for healthcare and public health. And then I'll talk to you a little bit about major cyber-led efforts in 2023. That's happening right now. Next slide, please. So there are 16 critical infrastructures, 16 critical infrastructures and 16 sectors that have been identified by United States government as critical. They are critical to the national security. They're critical to economic and public health, and critical with safety consequences. And healthcare and public health is one of these 16 critical infrastructures. And for each of these critical infrastructures, an agency has sort of been put in charge of looking after these infrastructures. And I'll talk to you a little bit later on about what that means. But at a high level, these agencies are monitoring the risk that these sectors face and develop risk mitigation strategies so that the sectors are not impacted, or that impact in the sectors from hazards are minimal. This, the definition of the critical infrastructure sectors originally came through a presidential policy directive, PPD 21, but very recently in FY 21, it was codified in the National Defense Authorization Act. So the NDAA, it's now part of the law. Structure of the critical infrastructures, the duties are very much defined in NDAA. As I said, the healthcare public health is designated as a critical infrastructure. Next. Before we go there, so if you can go back just real quick before we get to this. So as I said, healthcare and public health is designated as a critical infrastructure. So HHS has been designated as what they call a sector risk management agency. These are the agencies that have been put in charge of sort of more watching over these sectors. For healthcare and public health, that's HHS. I mean, within HHS, the secretary has designated ASPR to have that role. And within ASPR, it's been critical infrastructure protection division has been put in charge of the duties of SRMA for HHS. And we'll talk, I'll talk to you a little bit later on about what that means. But before we go, so since we are talking about cybersecurity, we can go to the next slide, please. We are looking at all the SRMAs are looking at the risks that these sectors face from all hazards, and one of those hazards, increasingly one of those hazards, is cybersecurity and cyber threats. And for healthcare, that has been a growing and pervasive issue, and we've seen an increasing number of cyber attacks against healthcare, and we're seeing a disruption of service on a continuous basis. Unlike other hazards that, for example, for hurricanes, that there's a season, although that season is getting longer and longer, or other hazards, cybersecurity seems to be an ongoing hazard that never ends. There are multiple reasons that's driving this pervasiveness and the increasing frequency of cyber attacks. First of all, this sophistication, the cybersecurity attacks have become very sophisticated. The tools that the attackers use are sophisticated, and the attackers have a community, a very strong community that share information among each other very effectively. So that the strong community and the sophistication of attack types is make it more difficult to identify the attacks. The other issue that the sector faces is the existence of legacy systems. For the longest time, healthcare and public health was, in terms of systems and updates, was very stable. And as the technology moved, it did not go through a big segment of the sector, did not go through updating and upgrading. So there is this, we face an existing of legacy IT systems, legacy tools, and so on. And some of them are running operating systems that are no longer supported by vendors. In some instances, there are systems that vendors are no longer there. And that really creates an opportunity for the attackers. We see a lot of those systems being compromised. On the other side, we also see the emergence of technology. We are now facing, and the sector is facing, the implementation of a lot of new tools, ML-based systems, for example, and so on. And these new technologies, sector itself is not familiar with, the cybersecurity staff is not familiar with, and unfortunately, the attackers are very familiar with them. And a lot of these systems are developed in an open source, through open source and an open environment, so they are, their internal infrastructure is very well known. We're also seeing that the increase in attack service in healthcare and public health. If you look at things, for example, in telehealth, we see that the care environment now extends from a hospital, a care provider, through various networks, various providers, all the way through a person's home, with a lot of sensors and laptops and handheld devices, and that all that provides an opportunity for attacks. We've seen also a slew of supply chain vulnerabilities, anywhere from the delivery systems to manufacturing, and so on. We also see substantial amount of attacks against medical record systems, medical and devices. In the medical record system, of course, is because it's very rich. It provides an opportunity for attackers to make a lot of money, frankly, by getting a hold of these records and threatening to expose them or basically just lock them from you. So that is seeing a lot of the medical record systems being attacked. And the issue of staff training continues to be substantial in healthcare. And not only the IT folks and cybersecurity folk training for them, but the medical staff, their main focus continues to be, thankfully, patient care. And so that their focus on patient care sort of makes cybersecurity secondary to them. And that is also an issue. Next, please. So just a little bit of the stats here, just to give you an idea how bad this problem is. So in 2022, there were 210 entities that worked with FBI because they reported being victim of ransomware. So these are only the folks that worked with FBI. The actual number is higher than this. There are people that chose not to report to law enforcement. Also, there was a study done in 2022 that showed that the healthcare organization, the attacks against health organization, doubled from 2016 to 2021. And we saw 42 million patients being exposed during that time. For us, a lot of you might be familiar because you were involved in helping us deal with that. It was the largest attack that we've recently seen. The largest one was in last year was Common Spirit ransomware attack. And that compromised 623,000 patients, but also disrupted the delivery of care in multiple facilities. For rural hospitals that are operating on really small margins and they live day to day, they really don't have the budget, they don't have dedicated staff, IT staff, security staff. Sometimes you see people wearing multiple hats. We see they are being targeted increasingly and they also have a tougher time recovering from these attacks. Next, please. So what motivates people to target the healthcare and public health? The large majority of these attacks are financially motivated. They are cyber criminals, and they do this for money, and ransomware, and so on. But we also see a state sponsor that do this to disrupt the national critical functions. And we also see a marriage of convenience between cyber criminals and state sponsor attackers. Increasingly, we see a lot of that as well. And then we saw an increase, a continuous increase in activism, where during COVID and post-COVID, and there's a lot of that's happening also. Those come mostly in terms of distributed denial of service to disrupt the service. Next, please. So I don't have to tell you, you all know how complicated, complex the ecosystem of healthcare and public health is. There are many different pieces and parts and the subsectors and segments of this. I won't go through this, but from hospitals to technology providers, labs, and they all create an interdependency where the disruption of labs, for example, you've seen the disruption of labs, attack against labs had extended to hospitals, for example, and so on and so forth. Next, please. So what happened in healthcare and public health, we talk about patient safety. And out of our goal, although financial factors are substantial and it's important, but for us and for hospitals and for patients, is about disruption in delivery of care. We've seen increasingly that ransomware attacks hit hospitals, the tools and devices that are critical to delivering patient care. We are currently dealing with an attack against the hospital that delivers radiology services for cancer patients. And that attack actually disrupted the delivery of care for a number of days, 4 days, and they're just starting to recover from that. And they know that the attackers know that by targeting these care delivery systems, and that it's more likely that the hospitals would pay their ransom. The other issue that is becoming more and more concerning is an attack against one hospital, the care delivery system, it extends to others because the patients have to be diverted to other neighboring hospitals. And a lot of the risk assessments that we do is contextual. So what that means is that when we try to measure the extent of risk that a cyber attack has caused, we look at it to see what other hazards are happening in the area, whether the area is also dealing with forest fires or this thing. There is an incident, for example, now in Caribbean. We are concerned. We are very focused on hospitals because of the hurricane season. Next. A lot of these, so as I said, I talked to you a little bit about all the risks, all the cyber threats that the sector faces. I'd also told you before that the assignment of Sector Risk Management Agency, or SRMA, to look after this critical infrastructure. For healthcare and public health, a very large, that is almost 90% or more, owned and operated by private sector. So the role of us as the SRMA is a lot of it is about building collaboration space with our private sector partners, work very closely with them from all hazards angle. The SRMA looks from all hazards angle. We have some of my colleagues look at the sector through a different lens. My lens is cybersecurity. So a lot of that work is sector coordination, serving in terms of day-to-day federal interface for the prioritization of only cyber-related sector activities. We build a lot of task groups to identify and address, develop strategies for mitigating cybersecurity risks. Right now, there are 17 task groups joint task groups that are operating the private sector, and there's also a 405D program that also develops a lot of procedures for mitigating cybersecurity risk that office runs from the OCIO, but it's under the Sector Risk Management Agency work. And then we also do a lot of threat assessments. We do a lot of intelligence gathering. We work very closely with DHS, with NSA, with FBI, to identify the threat vectors, to find what is happening in the sector, and then develop mitigation work and share that information with our sector partners. And then also we do a lot of incident management. We monitor major cyber incidents in the sector. Of course, we don't own the assets. We sort of, for the most part, we do a lot of risk assessment in terms of what it does to the totality of the delivery of care. Very recently, we've developed a risk management product that and risk assessment. And we do get involved. We do an assessment of risk, the impact to the sector, to the delivery of care, and we support the national cybersecurity policies. Next, please. A little bit, just to give you a little insight of how we do this work. So on the public side, ASPR is the coordinator of the sector risk management agencies. And on the government, ASPR manages the government coordinating council within HHS, all the operating divisions that are the stakeholders in healthcare and public health. There is a council that also ASPR manages, and there are working groups under that, under these both GCC and HHS that ASPR manages, and there's a lot of work that happens on the public sector side. On the private side, almost the same. There is a council that has been set up of private sector partners, and there is they elect their own leadership. They have working groups and subtask groups and so on. And we come together as this joint task group. ASPR, I am the co-lead. I'm the co-lead of the Joint Cyber Working Group, along with my partners from FDA and OCIO. And we have folks from the private sector side and the council. And under that, we have a lot of joint task groups that look at all the emerging and ongoing cybersecurity risk in the sector. Next. Inside the GCC, just give you a little view. The cybersecurity working groups, we work very closely, as I said, with state local authorities, with FBI, with NSC. We do a lot of collaborative work with SRMAs in other sectors. There's a lot of dependencies that we all have to each other. We share a lot of information. And all this really works under the leadership of DHS CISA, which oversees all the sector risk management agencies. Next. So a little bit about what is the major tasks that are ongoing. Earlier this year, there has been a lot of attention from the White House on the role of the sector risk management agencies and cybersecurity. And healthcare and public health this year has been on top of everyone's attention. So there is a lot of attention from the secretary on improving and harmonizing the SRMA functions. So we are working very closely with Deputy Secretary's office and with our other partners within HHS, FDA, CMS, OMC, OCR, to harmonize our activities as a sector risk management agency. We are also involved in updating the healthcare industry cybersecurity task force report. If you remember, I think it was maybe about 5-6 years ago that at the request of Congress, HHS led joint efforts to develop this a healthcare industry cybersecurity task force report, which provided a blueprint for us to work in terms of risk identification, cybersecurity risk identification, and mitigation strategies. It's been a while. It's now time to update it. And there's a lot of work that's going on to update that plan. We're targeting the end of this year. As I said, we have we finally, after a couple of years of effort, we have developed the HPS sector cyber incident management plan. Right now, it's very much focused on coordination of activities within HHS in response to healthcare and public health cyber incidents. But now we are working to expand that outside of HHS, coordination with other agencies that are involved, and also with health ISACs and other stakeholders. We, with the Joint Cybersecurity Working Group this year, released the NIST Cybersecurity Framework Implementation Guide. Very, very substantial work. It's a very big, detailed document. If you have not seen it, it's in ASPR's website. You received a lot of attention from the Congress for releasing that. Now, we are working this year to incentivize our sector to move towards adopting the NIST cybersecurity framework and design and operate their environment accordingly. There is, this year, Congress passed a CERCIO law, which obligates the reporting of cyber incidents to federal government, that the implementation of that law has been passed to DHS CISA, and we are working very closely with CISA in operationalizing that. And also, there is a lot of work that's happening now in terms of development of performance goals, cybersecurity performance goals for healthcare and public health, and a lot of work now in terms of improving the cybersecurity posture of public health and the small rural healthcare. We see that they are increasingly targeted, and they are that core community is less abled and less resourced. And so we are going to work very closely with that.
And Bob, we're right about time. So we want to...
I only have one more.
Okay.
I think. Okay, just very quick, I have two more, but I won't go through this. We are doing a lot of work with HPP. I just wanted to bring that up. A lot of you are familiar with some of the work that we are doing with you all, with our HPP colleagues. This is one of them in terms of developing cyber event essential elements of information. And we are, as I said, we are also working, if you go to next slide, I wrap it up. We are also investigating of developing incentives for less financially distressed providers to meet minimum cybersecurity standards. Sorry, I went through a lot of information in a very short amount of time, and my contact information is here. I do want to close my presentation by asking for your help. The cybersecurity working group, the task groups, they are dependent on people that have assets, knowledge and implicit knowledge of the environment. So it's an open invitation to join these task groups, join the work. And if you're interested, send me a quick email. We would love to have you. That I'll stop and answer any questions that you might have.
Bob, I know there was one question in the chat from Eileen who asked, are some of the attacks fueled by entities trying to steal new advances in healthcare, medicine, et cetera, especially in facilities that are also, or that also have large research components?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we saw a ton of those type of attacks during COVID as our partners were busy developing therapeutics and vaccine. We saw a lot of attacks for stealing of intellectual property. and that is a huge concern. We're continuing to see that, of course.
Great. Well, thank you, Bob, so much for the presentation, and thank you, Eileen, for the question. We'll now pass it over to Rachel Lehman, the acting director of Asper Tracy. If there are any other questions for Bob, he did include his contact information in the presentation, or you can always reach out to your field project officer and we'll pass those questions up. So I will now turn it over to Rachel.
Thank you, Angela. It is such a pleasure to be on today's call. I'm excited to highlight Asper Tracy's cybersecurity resources, as well as some of our new and upcoming products. Next slide. So our cybersecurity resources are some of our most popular resources, and I think after Bob's presentation, it is understandable why that is. In fact, our cybersecurity readiness and response considerations document is our most downloaded Asper Tracy product. If you're not familiar with the cybersecurity readiness and response considerations, the origin of the documents was in 2020 when Asper Tracy received a technical assistance request from a hospital looking for specific considerations related to the effects of a cyber incident on the healthcare operational environments, and that impacts the ability to effectively care for patients and maintain business practices and readiness during such an event. There is already great resources available that discuss the IT response to a cyber event, so our considerations document focuses on the healthcare operations and ensuring patient care. The document is intended for a large-scale cyber incident, but many of the strategies and principles outlined are relevant to a range of cybersecurity incidents and healthcare facility types. The considerations document is split into three large categories: preparedness and mitigation, response and recovery. But overall, the document focuses on five key actions for healthcare facilities. First, ensuring consistent surveillance of their systems, being able to identify triggers and go to immediate shutdown and escalation of the issue, communicating to all stakeholders, implementing business continuity processes, and lastly, implementing downtime recovery processes. This document and the accompanying national webinar and speaker series recordings were done in collaboration with Nebraska Medicine and MedStar, who provide extremely valuable real-world examples of their hospital's responses to cyber attacks. The document was originally published in February 2021, and with the help of subject matter experts, we updated the document in October 2022. The update was conducted to provide new case studies and examples and to include updated information and considerations. In addition to the cybersecurity readiness and response considerations document, we have a healthcare cybersecurity resource page and a cybersecurity topic collection. The great products that SIF and the HPH Sector Cybersecurity Working Group produce can be found in the cybersecurity topic collection. Our second issue of the exchange also focused on cybersecurity and cyber hygiene. And then lastly, we have a cybersecurity section on our select TA responses webpage. There are some incredibly useful TA responses in that section, so I highly recommend reviewing that webpage when you have the time. Next slide. Moving forward to our new and upcoming products. Since we last updated this group in March, we have released several new resources we are very excited about. In April, we had a roundtable featuring speakers representing a wide range of stakeholders and jurisdiction types, sharing their perspectives on how they integrated lessons learned during COVID-19 and recent incidents into current and future responses. Some of the topics covered in the roundtable include channels used for outreach and continued engagement, strategies for reaching different community and cultural groups, tracking and countering rumors, and working with partners to create complementary messaging. As we did for the other provider and supplier types that comply with the CMS EP rule, we created a facility-specific requirement overview document, or crosswalk, for rural emergency hospitals, which, as of January 1st, are a new provider type. Last week, we released our 17th issue of The Exchange. In this issue, you can find experiences and lessons learned from healthcare facilities and systems that endured water and other utility outages because of severe weather. Specifically, you can read about the effects of the Jackson, Mississippi water crisis on a healthcare system, how a facility in Texas incorporated lessons learned from 2021's Winter Storm Uri, which led to power and water outages at several hospitals in Texas, the significant impacts that Hurricane Ian had on hospitals in Southwest Florida, and how the Northwest Healthcare Response Network worked with hospitals across Seattle and beyond to manage a severe heat event in 2021. And we've already received a lot of really great feedback on issue 17. So if you have not had the chance to read it, I highly recommend doing so. Our new Mass Casualty Hospital Capacity Expansion Toolkit is a concise, scalable surge response template, which can be a helpful quick reference to the hospital personnel tasked with expanding care capacity in the first hours of a mass casualty incident and can minimize the ad hoc and potentially conflicting decisions about prioritization of space and strategies. In collaboration with HCOR, we released a medical countermeasures commercialization resource page, which provides resources for stakeholders who are interested in the commercialization of vaccines, therapeutics, and other products developed with the support of the US government and later transitioned to commercial channels. Then in collaboration with OASH and ASPR leaders, and in honor of Pride Month, we released the LGBTQI+ Community and Disaster Preparedness and Response Topic Collection. This is our 60th topic collection, and it provides resources for LGBTQI individuals, tools for planning, resources for emergency planners and healthcare providers, resources specific to behavioral health, and resources that provide lessons learned from the COVID-19 pandemic, MPOX, mass casualty incidents, and natural disasters. The information and resources included in this topic collection can help emergency planners and healthcare providers create a more inclusive environment after a disaster occurs. We continue to release utility disruption speaker series recordings, and we recently comprehensively updated our risk communications, social media and emergency response, and utility failures topic collections. To be noted, our risk communications and social media and emergency response topic collections both now feature a misinformation and disinformation section. Next slide. And I want to flag some of our upcoming products as well. Associated with the roundtable we held in April, we are putting together a lessons learned in healthcare communications documents. Will be an experiences from the field article. Of particular note, we are updating the EMS infectious disease playbook. The original playbook was developed in 2017, and we've been working with numerous subject matter experts to incorporate new considerations. The updated playbook will be available later this month. You can expect the updated healthcare provider shortages, resources, and strategies for meeting demand documents, and the healthcare facility onboarding checklist later this summer as well. And keep an eye for the updated topic collections you see on the slide. We'll be releasing those throughout the summer and the fall. And if you're attending the Joint Commission's Emergency Management Conference later this month, please check out the two sessions from our senior editor, Dr. John Hick, on the DASH tool and workplace violence. Next slide. Thank you all for listening, and thank you to the Office of Healthcare Readiness for having ASPR Tracy on today's webinar. And I'm happy to take any questions if there are any. Okay, the sound of silence. Please do not hesitate to reach out to ASPR Tracy if you do come up with any questions. And I will pass it back to you, Angela. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rachel, and thanks for the great presentation and the entire ASPR Tracy team for putting together such a comprehensive and relevant materials. I will ask for, you already did the next slide. I didn't even have to ask. Thank you for that. So now we'll have the general Q&A. We have a few minutes before the top of the hour, so we would like to open the line for any other questions, either for the presenters while we have them or for ASPR in general.
And Angela, I see a couple of questions coming into the chat. The first one is from James Moss, who asked, when should we expect our final BP5 budgets?
Yeah, we still have not received those. As soon as we do, we will make sure that they get sent out. We have been reviewing the applications that were submitted in Grant Solutions, and we'll finish those reviews this week so that the notices of award will go out on schedule by July 1st. But as soon as we do receive the HBP BP5 final budget numbers, we'll definitely send a notice out to everybody.
Hey, Angela, it looks like there's also a little follow-up there about, is there any update on the timing of the HVP NOA? And I mean, I can answer that one real quick. So the NOAs are still on track to be issued by July 1st, which they traditionally are. So you may see them a day or two early by the end of June, populate up in Grand Solutions, but they are set to be released on July 1. So, you know, there's the funding is there. The funding is ready to be dispersed. The NOAs are on track to be released, but like Angela said, we don't have the final numbers for VP5 to be published yet, but that doesn't mean that the funding is not there and the NOAs won't be provided on July 1.
Also, Matt, can we go ahead and put the Mercy slide back up again that we had promised to circle back to? Thank you. Okay.
And it looks like.
Also, there was a question about the performance application module states it's open until the 31st of December. Yes, that's just a placeholder. We do not expect, we expect the numbers will be before the 31st of December, of course. But we had been asking them to keep it open, you know, a couple weeks ahead of a time. And at this point, we just asked them to push it back so that we did not have to keep doing that. Because we had anticipated, of course, that those numbers would have been received by the 16th. Which is this Friday, but we have not seen them yet. So that's just a number that was pulled out to do that. Okay, and I think we've already answered the NOA question.
There was one question from Edwin who asked, can the surge estimator tool be explained again? And I believe that relates to the Mercy. Oh.
Absolutely. So we can explain that one for you, Edwin. So in the current FOA, there was a requirement for the surge estimator tool to be completed by healthcare coalitions every other year. So those years being FY19 BP1, FY21 BP3, and then FY23 BP5. Thanks to our mutual friend COVID, the BP3 requirement to complete the surge estimator tool was waived. So coalitions completed it in BP1, and then it was waived for BP3. As we started looking at developing the continuation application guidance for BP5, we realized that a lot of coalitions were actually conducting a surge estimator survey to some varying degree. Across their coalition members as part of the Mercy planning process. So as they were beginning to develop their exercise scenarios and their exercise plans to complete the Mercy requirement, they were actually looking at that very similar and types of surge information and surge estimation totals across their coalitions to help complete that exercise. So in order to help reduce burden, and kind of build on something that they were actually using in more functional and operational way, we decided to basically integrate the surge estimator tool into the Mercy toolkit to assist coalitions in collecting that data as part of the exercise. So rather it being a separate standalone requirement, it's now just integrated into the Mercy itself. So as the coalitions look at the upgraded tool, or once we publish out the upgraded tool for BP5, they'll see the surge estimator tool piece built right into that tool, and it should assist them with better preparedness and better planning for conducting the Mercy in BP5 and eliminate the need for a second standalone requirement. I hope that answers that question for you.
Okay. And then also we had a question about why was the feedback deadline extended on the pre-decisional draft? Are you overwhelmed with suggestions or simply hoping for more? Are any significant changes in the works? Well, those are three questions. So I'll just go ahead and go through those quickly. The deadline was extended for several reasons, but mainly to continue to get feedback. We have received a lot, thousands of comments and different suggestions for that, and working on compiling those. But we are, at popular request, we did extend the deadline for that additional week. And of course, there will probably be some significant changes in the works for that, but we won't know what those are until we see the final draft. And of course, as soon as that is a final draft, we will make sure to share that with everybody. And then I do not see any other questions in the chat. I see lots of applause for it would be helpful to receive the NOA before July 1st. And of course, GMS will do their best to try to do that. Right now that is the schedule is, no later than July 1st to have those up.
Keeping in mind too, the NOA, the numbers that are going to be released in the NOA are the same, for now, at least the same budget numbers that were utilized during your budgeting and application process. So, and even if the NOA is issued before July 1, it doesn't take effect and the funding doesn't become available until July 1. So, for now, the information that you have is the most accurate and most current information to utilize for any of your contracting and budgeting needs. Once information is received back down from the ASPR, if budget numbers are changed, then that update will be made as well. But the information that everyone currently has is the most current and accurate budget information.
I am not seeing any more hands raised. Okay.
I see some comments about, obviously some contracting delays, but I don't know what else to offer as far as advice at this point.
Okay. There is just one more here. When responding to conditions of award or needs more information, the COAs or NMIs, would it be due 30 days after receiving the notice of award or the additional funding? Usually it is written in the notice of award that is within 30 days after receiving the notice of award. Okay, so that answers all of the questions that we've had so far. So then thank you all for your questions, and I'll ask to go to the next slide, but we jumped back. So if we could go to the closing remarks slide. So thank you to all of our presenters for their time today and to all of you for your active participation in today's meeting. As a reminder, we invite you to share any stories regarding how you or your HCCs or HCC members are using ASPR funding to make a positive impact on your communities. If you have a story to share, please fill out our stories from the field submission form or reach out to your field project officer for more information. A member of our team will drop the story from the field submission form link into the chat for easy reference. Thank you, Matt. We look forward to hearing about the great work that you're doing, and thank you again for attending today. Have a great day, everybody.